Bob, I've got to ask. When you saw Q greater than 10 on the monitors for the first time, what was going through your head?
Honestly, disbelief, then relief, then this wave of, I don't know, validation? We'd been telling people this was possible for years, and a lot of very smart people said we were wrong. So seeing that number, seeing the physics actually work, it was something I'll never forget.
Welcome to TechNova. I'm Dr. Sarah Chen.
And I'm Dr. James Park. Today we're joined by Bob Mumgarde, CEO and co-founder of Commonwealth Fusion Systems, the company that just achieved Q greater than 10 in their Spark prototype. Bob, welcome. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Bob, let's start with the basics for our listeners who might not eat, sleep, and breathe fusion. What does Q greater than 10 mean, and why is it such a big deal?
Sure. So Q, or the fusion energy gain factor, is the ratio of the energy coming out of the fusion reaction to the energy you put in to sustain it. Q of 1 means break even, you get out what you put in. Q greater than 10 means you're getting more than 10 times the energy out that you're putting in. That's the threshold where fusion becomes a net energy source, not just a science experiment. And this was achieved in the Spark prototype. Can you tell us about the device itself? Spark is a compact tokamak. It's about half the size of ITER, which is the big international fusion project in France. The key innovation that makes Spark possible is high-temperature superconducting magnets. We're using REBCO rare earth barium copper oxide tape magnets that can operate at much higher magnetic fields than conventional superconductors. Higher magnetic field means you can confine the plasma in a smaller device, which means less cost and faster construction.
So the magnet technology is really the enabling breakthrough, not the plasma physics itself?
That's exactly right. The plasma physics of tokamaks has been understood for decades. ITER is designed to achieve Q greater than 10 too, but ITER is enormous. It's been under construction for over 15 years, and it's billions over budget. What we did at CFS was say, the physics is settled, the problem is engineering. If we can build better magnets, we can build a smaller machine, and a smaller machine is faster and cheaper to build and iterate on. And that bet paid off. The Spark prototype hit Q greater than 10. Walk us through what actually happened during the test. We ran a series of pulses, each one lasting a few seconds, which is normal for prototype tokamaks. The first few pulses were at lower parameters, just to verify systems were working. Then we ramped up to full magnetic field, full heating power, and on the seventh pulse we saw it. The neutron detectors, the calorimetry, every diagnostic we had was telling us the same thing. The fusion reaction was producing more than 10 times the energy we were putting in. It was a good day.
So Spark proves the physics. But Spark is a prototype, it runs in pulses. A commercial fusion power plant needs to run continuously. What's the path from here to a power plant that actually puts electricity on the grid?
That's the right question, and it's the question we've been working on in parallel with Spark. The next machine is called ARC, Affordable, Robust, Compact. ARC is designed to be a demonstration power plant. It'll produce about 250 to 500 megawatts of electricity, and it'll be designed for steady-state operation, not just pulses. What are the main engineering challenges between Spark and ARC? There are three big ones. First, the diverter, that's the component that handles the exhaust heat from the plasma. In Spark, the diverter sees heat fluxes that are already at the limit of what materials can handle. In ARC, which runs at higher power and longer durations, we need a diverter that can survive years of operation, not just seconds. Second, the blanket, the component that surrounds the plasma and absorbs neutrons to breed tritium fuel. Tritium is one of the two fusion fuels, and it doesn't exist naturally in useful quantities. So the blanket has to produce it from lithium. That's a nuclear engineering challenge that hasn't been demonstrated at scale. And third, the magnets themselves. Spark's magnets worked, but they're prototype magnets. ARC needs magnets that are reliable, mass-producible, and can operate for years without quenching.
And what's the timeline for ARC?
Our target is to have ARC operational in the early 2030s. We're already in the design phase, and we're building out the manufacturing capability for the magnets. The key insight is that the magnet production is the long pole. Once you can reliably produce high-field superconducting magnets, the rest of the machine is relatively conventional engineering. So we're investing heavily in magnet manufacturing now. Let's talk about the economics. Fusion has always been 30 years away and always will be. That's the old joke. What makes CFS different in terms of actually delivering affordable electricity? The compact tokamak approach fundamentally changes the economics. A small machine costs less to build, less to site, and less to finance. ITER is estimated to cost over 20 billion euros. Spark cost us under a billion. ARC will be more than Spark, but we're targeting a levelized cost of electricity that's competitive with nuclear fission and potentially with natural gas. The other economic advantage is fuel. Fusion fuel is deuterium from seawater and lithium. There's no fuel supply chain risk, no geopolitical vulnerability, no carbon emissions.
CFS isn't the only fusion company out there. You've got Helion, TAE Technologies, Zap Energy, and others all pursuing different approaches. How do you view the competitive landscape?
I think it's healthy. The different approaches, tokamaks, stellarators, field reverse configurations, magnetized target fusion, they're all trying to solve the same problem from different angles, and they all have different risk profiles. The tokamak is the most mature concept. It has the most physics basis, the most operational data. The alternative approaches have higher physics risk, but potentially simpler engineering. I think it's great that there's a portfolio of approaches being funded, because fusion is hard enough that you want multiple shots on goal. Do you see these companies as competitors or as complementary? Both, honestly, in the sense that we're all competing for talent, for investment, and eventually for market share, sure, we're competitors. But in a bigger sense, the entire fusion industry benefits from each success. When we announced Q greater than 10, I got messages from CEOs of other fusion companies saying, "Congratulations, this is good for all of us." And they're right. The biggest challenge for fusion isn't which approach wins. It's convincing the world that fusion is real and not science fiction. Every demonstration of net energy helps with that.
What about the regulatory side? The NRC has been working on a framework for fusion in the US. Where does that stand?
The NRC made a really important decision in 2023 to regulate fusion separately from fission, under a materials license framework rather than the full reactor licensing process. That was the right call. Fusion doesn't have the same accident risk as fission. There's no chain reaction. There's no long-lived radioactive waste. The regulatory framework is still being refined, but the direction is positive. The UK is also moving forward with a fusion regulatory framework, and they're actually being more aggressive. They want to be the first country to commercialize fusion. Bob, let's zoom out. If ARC works and you're putting electricity on the grid in the early 2030s, what does that mean for the world? I think it's transformative. Fusion is the only energy source that has the potential to provide baseload power, meaning it runs 24/7, not just when the sun shines or the wind blows, with zero carbon emissions, no long-lived radioactive waste, and effectively unlimited fuel. If you combine fusion with the renewable build-out that's already happening, you have a path to completely decarbonizing the electricity sector, and then electrifying transportation, heating, industrial processes. Fusion could be the backbone of a zero-carbon grid.
And what about the AI connection? There's been a lot of discussion about AI data centers needing enormous amounts of clean, firm power. Do you see fusion as part of that solution?
Absolutely. The hyperscalers, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Meta, they've all signed nuclear fission power purchase agreements in the last 2 years. They need clean, firm power for their data centers, and they're willing to pay a premium for it. Fusion is a natural fit for that market. An ARC plant producing 500 megawatts could power a large AI data center campus. We've had conversations with several hyperscalers, and the interest level is very high. Bob, this has been an incredible conversation. Before we wrap, what's the one thing you want people to take away from the Spark result? I'd say, fusion is no longer 30 years away. The physics is proven. The engineering is hard, but it's tractable. We have a clear path to commercial fusion in the 2030s, and the implications for energy, for climate, for the economy, they're enormous. This is the beginning of something big.
Bob Mumgaard, CEO of Commonwealth Fusion Systems. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you both. This was great. And thanks to all of you for listening. This is Technova. See you next time.